Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough!
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From the fairgrounds in New Orleans, Tuesday, and hard to have the usual, buoyant greeting, particularly when there's so many listeners. Louisville is as much a center for the show in terms of audience and following as anywhere in the country. So, as things unfolded yesterday morning, just so upsetting and disheartening and sad, and all the usual things that get trotted out time and again. I haven't heard specifically, but I imagine that there's countless racing connections, stakeholders, and horse players, breeders, owners, everyone, employees, the track that have a connection to those killed yesterday. And obviously all you had to do was see the governor and one of his close confidants and see how shaken he was. So for anyone that's listening that is affected by it, and we're all affected by it one way or another, but undoubtedly there's racing people that are grieving after yesterday. So I wanted to make sure to offer what little help and perspective it seems anyone can provide in this country when it comes to this. Just the endless, senseless stupidity associated with gun violence. Meanwhile, we've got plenty to occupy us and take our minds off. That's one of the reasons I think we all enjoy the game, because it's a respite and a diversion. It's got its own, obviously, it's got its own challenges and difficult moments, but ideally they're offset by the winning moments, the moments that motivate all of us to participate at whatever level we do. We actually got a couple of breaking news type stories. Casey, maybe pull out the you can pull out our old right, our old breaking news audio that we had, right? We used to once in a while we would throw out the Inside Edition, right? Do you still have that, or is that on one of the old computers that that died a natural death? We lost a lot of those great recordings that, you know, that we had over the course of the years. But we've got two sets of breaking news in the first, let's say, hour and 15 minutes. Eric Hallstrom is going to join us at the top of hour two, and we'll go to Horseshoe, and you know, I thought we would talk to, I think we, you know, we're just going to do our normal get ready for Horseshoe Indiana season greeting with Eric, and he said, you know, we've been working on a couple of things, and I would love to announce them. So, Eric Hallstrom with breaking news from Shelbyville. And looking forward to that. And, of course, I think they're drawing. When do they draw? They draw tomorrow for the opener? I'll pull up the condition book. We'll get the lay of the land for Horseshoe, Indiana, and the season ahead with Eric. And I think some news that people are going to be excited about. There was breaking news late yesterday as well from Maryland, and I unfortunately no sooner did the news break, I didn't even have to reach out to Alan Foreman. Literally, the must have been about 7 o'clock last night. The action out of Annapolis, which is going to be very important. It might not seem like anything to people outside right now of Anne Arundel and Baltimore counties, but there's real nuggets of hope and encouragement out of what happened yesterday. The legislature, in its final waning moments, actually, of the session, they are creating the Maryland Thoroughbred Racetrack Operating Authority. Does it have a good anagram? MTROA. Matroa. it's not perfect. How about Maryland Thoroughbred Racetrack Metro would have been good, actually. MTRO is pretty good. Metroa, not as punchy. Metro, though, is good. Yeah, we're just going to go with Metro. Maryland Thoroughbred Racetrack Operations. There we go. What this is going to be is essentially the guiding hand for the track renovation. And Alan's tied up today. He's with the grandchildren tomorrow. So he said Thursday morning we will flesh out everything involved in this. The governor is expected to sign the legislation. The operating authority would kick off June 1st. And this, you know, this has been hanging over the heads of Marylanders and the horsemen and everybody very quietly. I've referred to it a couple of times and hinted at it, but there's been some real concern about what, you know, where things stood, and some of that also is involved with the MJC, with the Maryland Jockey Club, and things are behind the scenes. The Maryland horsemen are working with the MJC, with the First Racing / Stronach Group / Belinda, and there's some things that seem to be happening, and I mean beyond the renovation of Laurel, which is imperative, even to some degree more so than Pimlico, because the Preakness can limp along on at Pimlico until whatever happens. Laurel is the site of racing most of the rest of the year, and it's vitally important that Laurel get its, not just a facelift. Laurel, for all the carrying on about Pimlico's condition, Laurel has only ever had surface freshening. The infrastructure of that building is fucked. As they might say in Reisterstown, the rebuilding of the tracks and whatever's going to happen with the community center and the reorientation of Pimlico, however this is going to happen, this was a vital first step. And, you know, a lot of things have kind of happened since pandemic, and the cost structure of the bond issue that was going to, you know, basically be created, you know, the Maryland Stadium Authority going to lend the money, front the money to pay for the, you know, the revitalization of both the facilities. This was a major breakthrough. It might seem like, you know, just a kind of a administrative element, but it's vital. So MJC, the Maryland Horsemen, and the Maryland Horse Breeders Association all working together on this, and, you know, the agreement that had been in place for 10 years, which expired at the end of last year, it got an extension, a six-month extension, to make this happen. So that was some very positive developments. I also asked Alan last night about the surface situation. They are working on the surface, and they think that they have got a handle. So that they think they know about, you know, what happened with the cushion that they have to address here. Yesterday, today, you know, you got a big steak weekend ahead on Saturday, as we discussed yesterday with, in fact, just now, if you were listening to the replay, you heard Brittany Russell. So we'll get all of the Maryland news, as we always do, from Alan Foreman. All right. And then the other breaking news is going to happen here in about 2 minutes. We're going to have Marty McGee join us. And I got to spend Saturday with Marty. And he said, you know, we should maybe talk on Tuesday. And that kind of set off a little bit of an alarm bell for me. I said to Marty that Tuesday would be, you know, would be fine. And he joins us now. Marty, good morning.
Hey, how are you?
I'm all right. I had to start the show, you know, given the audience we have in Louisville, with yesterday's just tragic circumstances. But other than that, you know, it's a time of year we're supposed to be getting excited.
Yeah, we are. I mean, when does this end?
Nope.
Yeah, if it's not, here in Louisville, it's, you know, wherever.
Yep.
And it's you wonder if you're safe anywhere anymore.
The answer is no.
So we're just anyway, this city is reeling right now, and I guess it'll be like Virginia Tech or Austin, or where, you know, there's a million of them now. Orlando, just what other choice do we have, Steve, but to keep moving?
Yeah, and exactly.
And you know, I just briefly this morning, I had a doctor's appointment earlier, and you know, listening to the radio, and it's the same thing every time. So just like I'm talking, you know, like we're talking, what can you say, what can you do? So
yeah, no, I agree.
Anyway.
Agreed. I did promise everybody that, boy, breaking news from the Ville to Shelbyville today, as it happens. my inclination is to start with the Keeneland results, but I think I should just turn the mic over to you. I had a feeling. I have a feeling I know what's coming.
Yeah, you saw what happened with Jay Pribman back in September. It's happening to me. As a matter of fact, when he retired, I said, "Man, you beat me to it." But I am going to retire. The Kentucky Derby coming up on May 6th is my 50th one I will have attended. My dad wouldn't let me go till I was in high school. So I missed Secretariat in 73, but I've been to every one since then. But Kentucky Derby Day 2023, my 50th, will be my last as a professional racing journalist, I am going to immediately start working for Joe Talamo, who was just over here at my house a bit ago. I'm his agent, and hope to get him back up the ladder where he belongs, and we're really excited about it. But in the meantime, I can't say enough good about the people I've met, the people I've worked for, people I've worked with, the trainers, the owners, the jockeys, their agents. You know, I remember playing in Bonnier Little League when I was 12 years old, and I think by that time I'd already decided I wanted to write about horse racing, and I'm very honored to have been able to do that. But my last story will be on Derby Day of this year. And then somewhere down the road, Steve, I've just collected too many memories, too many thoughts, too many good stories to not go ahead and write my memoirs. I think I might call it something like my 50 years at the Kentucky Derby. But that's down the road. And in the meantime, I just want to go out the right way. The Daily Racing Form has been incredibly good to me. I had cancer 10, 12 years ago, and they gave me all the time off I needed for that. I had a knee replacement last summer. They gave me all the time I needed for that. Got divorced back in 2000, all the time I needed for that. And they've just been good. They sent me to Florida. I've filed stories combined with the Baltimore Sun, you know, where I worked from 85 to 92. I counted up. I've written racing stories from 17 different states. And, you meet a lot of people along the way. And sometimes you even forget what you've done. My buddy Tony King, God bless him, he died a week ago Saturday. His funeral service was here in Louisville on Friday, opening day of Keenan's first opener I've missed since 95. And one of the stories I'd forgotten I'd written was displayed. I'd written about him. He was 24 years old. He died at age 50. So it was, I must have written it in 96 or 97. And so it's been an incredible journey. I've probably been on your show 400 or 500 times. I've always kind of taken aback at how many people listen to this show. They'll say something to me when I'm walking through the grandstand or whatever, and it's just been it's been quite the life, and I'm extremely thankful to everyone who's helped me along the way, and looking forward to my next endeavor.
Marty, obviously excited for you, and simultaneously, saddened by a departure like this, as we were with Jay, just because, not that, Jay was on Friday and he'll provide the same insights that he always has, but there's just something, there's something about being together at events, and the media scrum and the the crews that cover this includes the photographers and the TV people, and I mean everybody that follows along with the game, and we all fall into a certain, there's a real pattern to the year, and so there's certain things that you just anticipate and expect and look forward to, and it becomes the habit and practice of your job and your career and the lifestyle, and so to not expect or to not be able to anticipate seeing certain people in certain places at certain times is a little jarring. I mean you and Jay in particular, and and Dave and Mike Welch, and it one of the things that to me has given this show any credibility is the regular appearances by the top correspondents in racing journalism, and that's you and Jay and Mike and Marcus and Brad Free and Steve Anderson and Ron Gierkink, and I mean all of you that have built up the kinds of reputations that you have for just for quality turf writing and handicapping and analysis, and basically have been the guides to just countless horse players and stakeholders, and I'm in awe of what all of you do, because it's tireless and remarkable, and you've got to be like Jay, just as respected and appreciated as anybody. The concern that was shown when you were sick, that says a lot. That says it all. And you'll be a big star at as a jock agent, which is great that you're doing that.
Well, I hope so, and I really appreciate all the kind words from you, Steve, and everyone else. And I think the main thing is what you were trying to say is people trusted us.
Yeah.
People do trust us at the Racing Forum as providing integrity and just the insight that we have just by the positions we have. So hopefully I'll take that to my next move. I think a lot of these trainers do trust me to do right by them. I was telling Joe, I don't think I've ever really screwed anybody in terms of what I've written, not purposely. I remember one time this guy or that guy got a little angry with me, but I was always trying to do the right thing, and hopefully the skill set I've acquired as a writer will, a lot of that will carry over into being an agent. So I got to tell you, say it's tireless, the work we do. I'm tired. I going to Florida every winter and like going through Atlanta the Tuesday morning, coming back, in late March, it wears on you. And finally, growing up, I never really thought about retiring. And then just finally over the last year or two, I was like, man, we're getting old. You know exactly when my birthday is. You and I will both be 64 in November, and it's time for some of the younger people to take over. I assume Marcus and Nicole Russo will take over a lot of my responsibilities, but obviously that's can't be of my concern anymore. But onward and upward, and like we talked about very first, after this tragedy in Louisville, life goes on, and that's it.
When did this occur, and how long have you thought about it? I'm intrigued by that part of it.
Yeah. Well, I've actually been thinking about it a long time, and because Joe Talamo is married to my niece Elizabeth, who is the right daughter of my sister Amy. There's four of us McGee's. It's me, Susan lived in California, worked at Hollywood and Del Mar and Santa Anita for years, probably close to 20, until she moved back here in Louisville in 2003. And then there's my brother Paul, who of course is a trainer, and Amy is the baby, and she was married to Ron Ellis for many, many years. They have three children. Elizabeth's the oldest, and now Joe made the decision as the Southern California circuit started to deteriorate to the extent that it has, decided, like a number of other California horsemen, to move east. And he first he went to Oaklawn Park. I was looking up his record here back when he first left California. He rode Mucho Gusto to four stakes wins for Baffert. He rode She Dares the Devil, Serengeti Empress, Whitmore, Girl Daddy, Ibar, Midnight Bourbon, Clarier. He rode all these really good horses to stake great stakes wins. And then just as time went on, things with the Racing Form, we're not, if you pick up the Daily Racing Form, it's not near the product it used to be back when I started in 1992. That's a function of a number of different things, but the whole thing just kind of came together, I think, over the last year or so, where Joe, I remember the day after the Derby last year, Joe and Elizabeth had a party over here at their house. And I said, give me a year. And darned if it hasn't happened that way. That over the winter in Florida, I was really heavily considering doing this, and I had some consultations with Joe and some other folks, and we decided to go on and go on with it. And I think the timing is right, and there's nowhere for him to go but up. He's determined to. He has a lot of energy. My girlfriend Alicia and I are Joe's biggest fans, and I've just seen him ride too many races, and I've seen him around too much. He's like an acrobat. I've seen him on a trampoline jumping up and down like he's, you know, a gymnast. He's very supple. He's still only 33 years old. He's got a lot of race riding ahead of him. So in that respect, there's no reason for me not to be excited about it.
No, no doubt. In terms of geography, have you thought that portion of it through? I mean, will you just basically stay home and be in, you know, be in Louisville, you know, year round? Obviously the turf the jock agent position has changed somewhat where. I mean, if Joe was to go out of town, winter in New Orleans, like I'm coming to you from the fairgrounds. What kind of portion of the decision making has been done on that front? Winter in Turfway?
Well, obviously we'll be here the other 8 or 9 months.
Right.
Turfway is still TBA. I mean, let's see how he's doing as the Keeneland and Churchill next fall, but. Joe and Elizabeth have two young sons. One of them's 6 and one of them's about to turn 5. And so they'd like to stay home, you know, all things being
right.
equal. But I have one hang up about Turfway, and it was so bad for so long that you become labeled a Turfway jock and you're out of sight, out of mind, especially vis-a-vis all these races we have coming up right now, you know, the Derby and the Oaks and everything else. So there's that dilemma. There's that thing to consider. But meanwhile, the purses at Turfway are so much better than elsewhere. For example, you know, every winter I loved leaving Gulfstream and going over to Tampa for both the Sam Davis Week and the Tampa Bay Derby. I did that the last 10 or 12 years. I love Tampa. Their purses are horrible. As one trainer told me, they pay you in sunshine to be here. You know, they don't pay you in real money. If you go to Turfway, you're running for maiden specials for what, $60,000? Down there, it's $20,000. That's a big difference, Steve. And I've seen a lot of guys come and go in and out of Tampa. They're like, yeah, it's real nice. I'm going broke doing it, though. So there's a big trade-off there. The money that they're having here in Kentucky, the purses, and then it's going to be even better, you would think, with them getting a little piece of the sports gambling that's going to come online here in late summer. And so that's one thing we'll have to do. But the good news is, overall, the rest of the year, there's plenty of big money races here. The purse structure at Keeneland, Churchill, Kentucky Downs, even Ellis Park are terrific. I mean, you feel like you're stealing almost how big the money is.
Well, it makes perfect sense. The portion of this, Marty, that the first place this will be felt, at least by me, will be at Pimlico. I'm wondering if the decision was sealed by my news that last week when I was at Gulfstream, Dave Joseph letting me know that the elevator will not be working, and I'm wondering if that. If that sealed the deal.
I hadn't even thought about that. You have no idea how many hours I've spent on that elevator at Pimlico. You have no idea, you know, because I worked there 7 years. And, but yeah, I will not look, I will not miss being at Pimlico. One of my dearest friends, Larry Horning, the retired trainer who lives, in Maryland, still near the bay. He's begging me to come to the Preakness this year as a tourist and go out on the bay on Sunday and Monday and you know, and like that. So I love Maryland to death. I still go back there on my own volition just to vacation every other year or so. But I will not miss broken down elevators at Pimlico. And it was my bad knees having to go up and down those stairs.
It's amazing how much of an influence, and I suppose this is true for any of us from so many walks of life and whatever our career paths are, no matter how brief portions of our you know lives and our workstations might have been, how much influence they have, you know, especially when you're young. And I mean, it's amazing to me how often I hear you reference the great Maryland writers and personalities, right? You know, Vinny and Clem Florio, and I mean, you make reference to them so often, and you were there, like you say, what, 7 years, and you made lifelong friends.
It was the heyday of Maryland racing in my mind. I was there from 85 to 92. Dale Austin was my mentor.
Dale Austin, that's right.
A dozen things that have stuck with me that Dale told me, don't make a line 92. Don't call somebody a guy, you know, in print. Don't, the difference between that and which, there's a bunch of things that he taught me. Andy Beyer was around all the time.
That's right.
And he would leave he would leave for the day. We'd play cards, racetrack rummy after the races. And Andy would leave, and we'd go there and pick up his losing tickets, you know, and he'd have $10 dry park wheels, four with the seven with the 8-11. And, and we would just laugh. And, Clem added so much to it. Joe Mercier and Jack Mann was one of the smartest guys I've ever met. He said he had one year of college, one. And he also said he closed down 23 different publications, newspapers and magazines. But he was a brilliant writer. We'd go to the Mount Washington Tavern after the races, and on the way home, I'd be hungry. I'd stop at Denny's. And that's when they had the paper racks then. And I would get the Evening Sun, which was out, and Jack Mann, I'd read his articles while having something to eat, and there'd be two or three words in the story I didn't know what the words meant. I mean, he was that good. He used to fight with his editors all the time, by the way, because they probably were saying, Jack, nobody knows what this means. Leave it in there, But Jack, I think he died in about the year 99 or 2000, but, it's just amazing what kind of impact people like that have on you when you're young. And so as you grow older, like we have, you try and be cognizant of that, and don't say mean things to people. Don't do mean things to people, you know, be kind. People are very grateful when you write about them, you know, put their name in the form or whatever paper you're working for, and just go on. And a lot of times there's really important subject matter to be, and yes, you do have to, you know, take some people down, but otherwise, it might not be that important. I'll never forget, there was one day, now he might have been kidding me, but this was before, Steve, stats were available as they are. And somehow I had gotten a hold of what trainers had done on the Maryland circuit that year, and there was a guy named David Knoll, K-N-O-L-L, and I'd written, he was like 0-18 or something. You know, he didn't have many horses. And then like on New Year's Eve or maybe the day before, he won a race. So I came down there. He was a nice guy. And he said, I really wish you hadn't put that statistic in the paper. We had, my wife had two of her family members get killed in a car wreck last week. You know, and you're like, oh my God. So, I didn't have to put that in there. So it's just things like that stay with you for many years. And, that's part of what my book's going to be about. It's just all the various things. I'm going to spend some time, I think, this summer in the Keeneland Library looking up all my Baltimore Sun and Racing Form articles and, see how that jogs my memory and what might be useful and notable and stories like that. But, it's been – I can't believe – like I said, I was playing baseball in Bonnier. I'm 12 years old. I want to write about horse racing. Here we are more than 50 years later.
Well, and the 50, it's a perfect, it's the perfect number, and my 50 derbies might be a good You got to come up with some working titles for the Marty McGee book.
Yeah, you know, I might have told you this before on the air, but when I was in my first Derby, it was 74. I was interviewed on the Wave affiliate in Louisville. That's when they all three, CBS, ABC, NBC, all could be in the infield until the, I guess CBS took the national broadcast. But Melissa Forsythe, who just died less than a year ago, I think, interviewed me and asked me who I like. And I told her Agitate, of course, that was Shoemaker. But my dad also said that Cannonade would beat Judger because they were coupled in the entry. But I cannot find the footage of that. And I've gone to the ends of the earth with the Wave people trying to find it. They said they took the film to the University of Kentucky Margaret King Library. Somehow it got misplaced or thrown away or whatever. But I would just love to get that footage from when I was 14 on television.
Oh, that would be amazing. That would be pretty cool. It's got to be somewhere, right? I mean, it's.
I don't know. I would doubt it. He said he acted like they. No, it's gone.
Wow.
So, but
there's somebody. Well, was that what were VCRs available yet? Not really.
No,
just
I don't
ahead.
Think so.
Just
1974.
Ahead.
1974.
You know who might be able to help you with that is some of the TV people that are you know going back, and because I guarantee that some network they tape those broadcasts, you know, and that they've got those whatever those big cartridges were at that time and you know, or reel to reel or something. It can't be an event as big as Derby. There has to be complete recordings somewhere of the
broadcast. Well, it was local. Like I said, it was
still,
just a local affiliate.
Still.
And they have insisted. The guy's name is Ken, starts with a W. I want to say Ken Workington, but obviously he's a Meadowlands guy. But Ken W. And I've talked to him twice about it. And he says, no, there was a batch of back in the 70s that somehow got misplaced or lost.
Well, it does happen. I can tell you from our, you know, with the, we lost countless, not DVDs, CDs that were recordings of the show. We used to have the CDs, you know, of every show. And it's 17 years. So, yeah, I guess I before digital recording. So yeah, I could say maybe. All right. Well, it's alive in your memory. That's what counts.
Yeah. So and then I went to the infield probably the first six or seven. Then I watched Genuine Risk win. I saw her pretty white face come down the stretch in 80. So I think that was about the end of my infield experience. Started going, and we would take like three or four of the clipped ones and then tape them together, and that would be your arm man to get in and out of the box area and stuff. So I can pretty much remember everywhere I've seen every Derby. Some are a little bit foggy, but you know, I had a good run there in 11 and 12 when Graham won it, and then my brother really liked the I'll Have Another, and I liked Bodie Nightmeister, so I nailed that. And then Orb was, I thought, was kind of a cinch, but so I crushed the pick four on that. I think I've out of my 50 Derby, the 49 Derby, I've probably only had the winner, you know, winning day seven or eight times, but some of those were pretty good.
Well, it only takes some opinion on either side that, you know, especially in the era of the multis. On that topic, I mean, we'll talk Friday ahead of the weekend at Keeneland, but some impressions of Saturday and what we saw.
Tap it twice. You know, I was there live at Tampa watching him run down the stretch when he passed everybody. It was like one of those harness horses who just comes smoking home. That's what it reminded me of when he won that race. And then at Keeneland, using different tactics, he didn't have quite the sharp kick like that. But man, that horse likes to run down the stretch. And I think he will be the second choice in the race, maybe 6-1 with Forte about 3-1. But does Todd have a stranglehold on this or what? So I wouldn't mind seeing Todd win another one. And that you had Tabitha Trice, and I was going to call Mark Cassie today or tomorrow, asking about Wonder Wheel, what in the world's going on with her, why didn't she run any good. I think it's kind of been documented. This is one of those down years, it looks like, out of the juvenile fillies. Mm-hmm. You know, it's amazing how quickly that stuff turns around. It's like the January 1st is the cutoff. You know, you're good one year, and then you're not any good the next. So we'll see what happens there. But the Oaks is going to be a terrific race, as always. Like my buddy Phil Thomas says about the Derby. Boy, it's going to be a great Derby, but which one isn't? So
we do have, and I do see this morning the point system. We're going to talk to Travis Stone later this morning as well, about 10:30. I put up a little tweet first thing this morning that just sort of, I was going through my notes, you know, kind of, you know, when you have, what is it, the pages section on your, you know, on your Mac, and I saw stars 2 as a heading, so I opened it up, and it was my, because I always send it to you the Sunday morning after the Stars of Tomorrow card. With all the maidens and the allowances and the stake horses. And so I put that up, and Travis, you mentioned down year, Travis said he was doing some data crunching and running some, you know, some files, and he says it's the slowest class since 2007. And a historically slow group of fillies. So I'm going to let Travis kind of flesh that out and see what he discovered. We're also going to talk about the point system, and I do see that DJ Fisk, who is the subject of a feature in the TDN yesterday, DJ is they're talking about running Disarm now in the Lexington to maybe garner points, which could squeeze, you know, a good finish would squeeze out Jace's Road.
Yeah, I don't know. I think Confidence Game is supposed to run in that.
Yeah,
and then
but he's secure.
Cox has another one too. Victory Formation, right. I think his name.
Yep.
I think Brad has, if I'm not mistaken, I think he has 4 in the top 20 right now. So it's going to be the Pletcher and Brad Cox show on Derby. But Travis Stone, in my opinion, a lot of the announcers are friends of mine. I don't know if anybody's better than him. He's really good at what he does.
That's for sure. And heavily, have the serious player and, you know, works with a number of guys that play on a serious basis, bright as can be, and always a worthwhile conversation. So we'll look forward to Travis. A couple of other performances that kind of resonated, I thought. How about that? You and I were watching as Billy Stinson came off the set of Yellowstone long enough to get his first graded stake win.
Came in his John Deere hat.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was good.
It was great. And then Ben Huffman told me, I've got to reach out for Nathan Hayden, the owner breeder. This is the first horse he's ever bred.
Wow. Wow. That's like the Kathleen O, where the guy who's 80-something years old, the first horse he'd ever owned, yeah.
Exactly. there was that story. I had Vicki Oliver yesterday. I don't know if you were as surprised as I was when they said that it was her first stake win at Keeneland. I was like, how is that possible, as much as she wins at Keeneland?
Could have knocked me over with a feather.
Right?
I never realized that, yeah. The folks she trains for, besides her dad, of course, but the BBN Racing, the good people. Brian Kladsky, he's very enjoyable to deal with, and I was glad to see that horse win for them.
It's funny, that division is shaping up as being very good. The early signs and the early, and that's without even any Euros, planning yet, or any names that we're aware of coming over for things like the Turf Triple at New York at NYRA. So we'll see where things go. But the three-year-old boys on the grass are shaping up nicely. I had Kenny on yesterday, McPeak. I had to talk to him. How many times is he going to pull off what he pulled off with the Ashland? And upon further review, that filly was far from impossible.
Yeah, I mean, did she walk the dog in there or what? I've seen the replay a couple times. It seems like they just weren't running very fast behind her. And once they got down the backstretch, it's like, wow, this horse they might not catch her, and they did. So I like when Kenny wins. He and I had this little game like one time years ago. He won a race, and I texted him, and he said, boom. So every time he does something like that, like after he won the Ashland, I just sent him the boom emoji. So don't ever count him out, too. His horses didn't run very good in the bluegrass. What did he say about Sun Thunder for the Derby?
It's funny you say you passed that. This morning when I woke up, and sometimes I'll mull things over in my head, and I was laying there, and I was thinking to myself, it was like 3:45, and I'm like, I couldn't remember if I got to Sun Thunder. I think I did with Kenny, but I didn't hear the replay this morning. I was on my way in here. I was walking up, so I missed that portion of the replay. So I can't remember if I asked him about Sun Thunder. I'm pretty sure I did.
Well, good. That'll give me something right about tomorrow. I'll call him today.
There you go. A couple of the other, obviously, we'll talk for a second about the weekend, but I got to mention Caravelle, who, off the layoff, and you look at her and you think, let me try to beat her here. And there's no beating her there. Unbelievable.
Yeah, I absolutely tried to beat her. To me, that was like a prime miss the wedding, go to the funeral kind of thing. You know, it's 42-1 the Breeders' Cup. Then she runs back at 8-5. And the whole Breeders' Cup winners tend to underperform first time back, blah, blah, blah. And here she is winning like a four-horse cavalry charge by, a desperate neck. But that's the power of Brad. Man, is he going good right now. So, and such a... such a good story, starting with the Merrimans and everything else for Caravelle. So a lot of great stories in this game, Steve. That's why we're in it.
Well, the thing about Cox's weekend, I mean, of course, Corona Bolt. I haven't even mentioned the Lafayette win on Friday from the three stakes that kicked off opening day. But to get beat in two preps the way he got beat between Verifying and Hit Show. I mean, to be two noses away from sweeping the wood in the bluegrass. You can't win them all. I guess is the way to parse that out.
Yeah, they'll get their shot in the Derby, though. That's the big one.
Well, that's exactly right. And Hit Show in particular, I think because he was beaten by the price that he was beaten. In terms of Sappy Joseph and Lord Miles, I think people are going to be dismissive of Hit Show, and I would not be dismissive of Hit Show so readily.
Another country hard front.
No, exactly. And Good Night Olive, of course, she also comes back, and another runner that like Caravelle wishes that they ran the Breeders' Cup every year at Keeneland.
Yeah, right? I guess she runs back in the Grade One on Derby Day, the Derby City Distaff. So Chad gave her every indication she'll do that. So
absolutely,
she's won seven in a row now.
I it's funny. I noticed that, and it really has been perfectly handled. We look forward to Saturday. You mentioned the Lexington. The Jenny Wiley will be the Grade One. The Giants Causeway is on the card as well. Friday, of course, the Maker's Mark. I have not really, I've heard a couple of names, but we'll get ready for the Maker's Mark and the Limestone. And then on Sunday, the Beaumont and the Palisades. So, Marty.
Maker's Mark is Modern Games. He'll be 3-5,
that's right,
if
that's
not
right.
Less.
That's
and,
right.
And your girl, Michelle, brings back Damon's Mound and the Palisades on Sunday.
Outstanding. And the end is the finish line now really in sight, Marty. I can't congratulate you enough on this decision, and at least, you know, at least we'll see you, and you'll be involved, and I can reach out to you, and like I do the jock agent. Jock agents are great. They're great. They make for great copy. So I'm not dropping you from the Rolodex.
There you go. All right, Calamo all the way.
Marty McGee, everybody. DRF McGee, and have you decided on what are you going to do on your Twitter handle?
Well, I've looked up a Marty McGee, and it's already taken, but I think I can go Marty_McGee. That's the best I can do. So
I love it.
You know, it's funny, the other morning, on Easter morning, I was with my mom and everything. She goes, the Marty McGee show, we had ESPN on, and she goes, I didn't know you had that show. I was like, Mom, you would know if I had an ESPN show. But, you know, the Marty and McGee show. One year, Derby morning, I'm walking past the Marty and McGee set, and they were on break, and it was Marty Smith up there, and I stepped up, I said, I'm Marty McGee. He said, get up here, and he had me on for 3 or 4 minutes, so yeah, very cool.
Well, Marty, we'll talk Friday. I just, you know, I said what I needed to say, I guess.
I appreciate everything, Blake. I really, and all the listeners and the readers, it's been an absolute privilege, and I'm very, very grateful.
Marty McGee, everybody. We'll talk to him Friday, and make the most of his last few weeks as a full-time. That's how I termed it. I did tweet out something, and I've got much like with Jay, actually, with Jay Privman's Roto Graveur, I've got fabulous pictures of Marty over the years. And actually, the one I put up is one that he gave me of him with Chick Lang. And that's what I put up on the tweet. For those of you that aren't Twitter users, I said, excited for DRF McGee to become agent for Joe Talamo, but greatly saddened by announcement of his retirement from full-time turf riding and daily racing form. His May 6th deadline Kentucky Derby story, his 50th Derby, will be his last. Few journalists in the game are better liked or more respected. Marty McGee. A couple of minutes toward the top of the hour, and we'll take a rare, right at the right time, we will take an actual break, and we will break the show up into three distinct hours today. Andy Serling later, by the way. Andy, of course, at hour three. So we'll get some Wood Memorial Day analysis in from Andy. We got good between Safi and Brittany Russell and Ray Handel. So now I guess got to get to Linda too, right? And we'll have covered that off nicely. We talked most of the California with John as well. Although I guess we could probably got at least one more day of recapping. I could get back to Tim Yakteen and McCarthy with the upset. And that, I tell you, that awfully naughty, that was a nice performance. And this Doug O'Neill, you know, early on that card, if you missed that Evening Jewel, as John White stressed, ceiling crusher, the Mr. Big. And, you know, I haven't seen a fig. It's probably up by now. But in the John Shear on Sunday for the, what is he? Is he an octogenarian? No, he's more than that. He's 90, right? He's 90 plus. He's like 94, I think, now. John Shear. What do you call it? Let's see. There's the septuagenarian for 70-ish. Octogenarian. What is it? What is the 90? I don't know what the term is for a 90-ish, right? Well, set is French for seven, and oct for eight. Neuf is nine in French. Interesting. We'll look that up on the break. I don't know. And there's more. There's plenty more. 80, 90-year-olds and 100-year-olds. I read a, speaking of which, here's a ridiculous aside. I read of the passing of a 100-plus-year-old Al Jaffe. For those of us, I'm 63, as is Marty, as is Jay Pridman, as is Sid Fernando. And for those of you that don't know Al Jaffe, if you're too young to have grown up waiting at newsstands for that month's Mad Magazine to come out, Al Jaffe, the cartoonist, yeah, 103. Really, a terrific obit in the New York Times about the origins of the fold-in. Remember for those of you, again, you have to be, I think, a certain age of the Mad fold-in on the back inside cover. Yeah. Fascinating life, actually. His mother basically took the whole family took him and his siblings back to Lithuania. She was an immigrant, came over like in 1910 and wasn't comfortable in the United States, took the kids back to Lithuania, and the father fought to get the kids back and get them back to the U.S. And it's an unbelievable obit. Anyway, that's today's crazy aside. Al Jaffe, a lot of pleasure. He also used to do those. You remember the snappy answers to stupid questions? That was his feature too. Yeah, great career. We'll take the break. We'll come back with another piece of breaking news. I know, the breaking news. Second breaking news piece with Eric Hallstrom. And we'll get the scene set for Horseshoe, Indiana's upcoming meet.